Hello, I'm Tom Rollins, president of the Teaching Company. These lectures are part of the Great Courses on Tape series. The Great Courses on Tape cover a broad array of university-level disciplines. The lectures in each course are either 30 or 45 minutes long. By listening for less than an hour a day, you can finish even the longest course in just weeks. Browse our catalog or website and imagine how much you could learn if you spent just 30 minutes a day for the next year in the best college classrooms in the world. The lecturers are university professors carefully selected by the Teaching Company and its customers for intellectual distinction and teaching excellence. The lectures on these tapes are titled The History of Ancient Egypt, Part 3. The lecturer is Professor Bob Breyer. Professor Breyer is an Egyptologist and professor of philosophy at the C.W. Post campus of Long Island University. A native New Yorker, Professor Breyer was born in the Bronx, where he still lives today. He received his Ph.D. in philosophy from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill in 1970. He began teaching at C.W. Post campus in 1972. From 1981 to 1996, he served as chairman of the philosophy department. He has also served as the director of the National Endowment for the Humanities Egyptology Today program. Professor Breyer has twice been selected as a Fulbright Scholar and is a recipient of the David Newton Award for Teaching Excellence. In 1994, Professor Breyer became the first person in 2,000 years to mummify a human cadaver in the ancient Egyptian style. This research was the subject of a National Geographic television special, Mr. Mummy. Dr. Breyer is also the host of the Learning Channel series titled The Great Egyptians. In addition to his television and teaching experience, Professor Breyer is the author of several books and scholarly articles. His most recent books include The Murder of Tutankhamun, Egyptian Mummies, Encyclopedia of Mummies, and Daily Life in Ancient Egypt. Each of Professor Breyer's lectures is outlined in the course guide that comes with these tapes. The course guide also includes a glossary, timeline, biographical notes, a bibliography, and the ancient Egyptian alphabet in hieroglyphs. You might find it useful to review the outlines before and after listening to the lectures. Lecture 25, The End of Dynasty 18.
Welcome back. Last time we took a little detour and talked about ancient Egyptian medicine. What I'd like to do today is bring us back to the 18th dynasty and talk about how the dynasty ends. Now, one of the things that all Egyptologists talk about when we talk about the end of the 18th dynasty is the Amarna period. You'll remember Akhenaten, the heretic pharaoh, moved the capital of Egypt north from Thebes, 200 miles to the middle of the desert, and established his capital, which he called Achet Aten, the horizon of the Aten. But the modern local people there call it Tel al-Amarna. So we call this the Amarna period, the Amarna era. Amarna doesn't just refer to that town. It refers to the whole period, the art, everything involved. And it's all interconnected. Now, as you remember, Akhenaten tried to change the religion to monotheism. And it didn't work. When he died after 17 years of reign, everything went back to the old ways. Now, he left as his successor his son, Tutankhamun, young Tutankhamun, who had an advisor. Now, he was only 8 years old or so when he became king, so he's not calling the shots. He's not making the decisions. Somebody's making the decisions for him. And the best bet is that it's a man named Aye, who becomes the vizier of Egypt, the equivalent of the prime minister advising Tutankhamun, who had served under Akhenaten. Now, it's I, if you'll remember, who succeeds Tutankhamun by marrying the widow of Tutankhamun, young Ankhesenamun. I is probably 60 years old when he succeeds Tutankhamun. Right? He's an older man by Egyptian standards, certainly, when he becomes the next king of Egypt. There are only two more pharaohs in the 18th dynasty, I and his successor, Horemheb. But it's all interconnected. As you'll see, this is all what we call the Amarna period. It's an unusual period for Egyptian history. What you'll see is we're going to have three kings in a row who don't leave any children. And that leads to turmoil. Who's going to become king? The first of those three kings was Tutankhamun. If you'll remember, In his tomb, two fetuses were found, probably miscarriages of Ankhesenamun. Both little girls, one was about 8 months, one was about 5 months. But Tutankhamun did not leave a successor. But we know that I becomes king of Egypt. Now, remember, I started his career at Amarna. He was in with the pharaoh, Akhenaten. There are scenes of him on his tomb wall at Amarna, when he thought he was going to die there, at Amarna, of him and his wife, they're worshiping the Aten. So he was kind of politically correct. He was worshiping the Aten, he was in with Akhenaten, but as soon as Akhenaten dies, it's I who says, let's forget this new religion. Let's go back to polytheism. Let's change all the ways. He has Tutankhaten change his name to Tutankhamun. Remember, he wasn't born Tutankhamun. And then he says, we're going back to Thebes. So he's the one who's calling the shots, and he's sort of guiding Tutankhamun in the early days. Now, but he becomes pharaoh. He doesn't last long. As I say, by Egyptian standards, he's an old man. You know, the life expectancy is perhaps, you know, from birth to death in the ancient world is about 30 or so. He's 60s. He lasts only 3 years. He is king for approximately 3 years, between 3 and 4 years, and then dies and is buried in his tomb. Now, what's important is where his tomb is. And you'll see it's politics that determines it, not looking for the best site necessarily. I is buried in the Western Valley. Now remember, 18th dynasty, Thutmose I has the first tomb in the Valley of the Kings. And from him on, the 18th dynasty kings are buried in the Valley of the Kings, that main valley, until Amenhotep III, the great king who has Egypt at its greatness. Amenhotep III decided to put his tomb way off in the Western Valley, a spur of the Valley of the Kings. That's where I has his tomb. Now you might wonder, why does he have his tomb off with Amenhotep III? Why is it there? Well, it's a political reason. He didn't begin that tomb for himself. That tomb was begun for Tutankhamun. Not only did I take Tutankhamun's wife, he took his tomb. You see, as soon as you became king, you started building your tomb. And when Tutankhamun makes the journey from Amarna back to Thebes, he has to pick a site for his tomb. Now, I is his advisor. Tutankhamun is maybe 9 years old by now, perhaps. And I suggests, probably picks, I don't mean to say suggest, he probably tells him, the Western Valley. Why the Western Valley? The answer is, it's a statement. And the statement is this. Remember, Tutankhamun's father was a heretic. He was viewed as the trouble. He was the problem. Nobody liked Akhenaten in Thebes. So when Tutankhamun's coming back, he's got to show, I'm a legitimate king. I've got royal blood in my veins. But he can't identify himself with his father because he's the heretic. That's sort of bad. So I makes the decision, we'll bury you next to Grandpa. Amenhotep III is his grandfather, the great traditional king. So Tutankhamun's tomb is selected as right next to his grandfather's. It's a statement saying, I'm a traditional king. I'm not like my father. But Tutankhamun died suddenly, perhaps murdered. His tomb wasn't finished, barely started. So he was hastily buried in another tomb that was at least further along in construction in the Valley of the Kings. So he's quickly buried in the Valley of the Kings, the main part, leaving Tutankhamun's original tomb empty, and that's where I is buried. He takes Tutankhamun's tomb and his wife. The tomb is interesting, by the way, for another reason. I's tomb is quite similar to Tutankhamun's. Quite similar. Almost as if he wants to identify himself with Tutankhamun. Now, I think there's a reason for that. Tutankhamun must have been a very popular king, returning everything back to the good old days. Everybody's temples are going to be open again. The gods are back. So I is saying, I was with him. For example, on one of the walls in Tutankhamun's tomb, there's a scene of 12 baboons. These are 12 baboons that guide the boat of the solar god through the sky. I has the exact same scene on his wall. And if I had a bet, I would say it's the same artist who painted it even. If you look at it, it looks like the same hand. You know, I've looked at it closely. I think it's probably the same artist. So I is saying, I'm establishment too. I'm a good guy. He even has a sarcophagus like Tutankhamun's. right? So there are many, many similarities that Ay is trying to identify himself with Tutankhamun. The only thing he doesn't have on his wall is Ankhesenamun. She doesn't appear on the wall of Ay's tomb. We don't know why. Maybe she's dead by now, but she's not there. So Ay only reigns for 3 years, dies. His tomb is robbed eventually. His name carved off the wall, as we've discussed. But next, Horemheb is the next pharaoh. Now, remember what I said, that Horemheb didn't leave children either, right? We're going to have three kings in a row with no children. Tutankhamun, no children. Ay, no children. And now we've got another pharaoh who's going to have no children, Horemheb. What do we know about Horemheb? Well, the first is he's a military man, a career military man. He started his career probably under Amenhotep III, right? And when Akhenaten moved the capital and sort of let the military go, didn't support the military, Horemheb didn't go to the new capital. Horemheb stayed behind at Memphis. So he was probably pretty much languishing as Akhenaten lets the military go downhill. Horemheb is just sort of hanging out, not doing much. So he wouldn't be a supporter of Akhenaten under any circumstances. I mean, it's the old thing. It's sort of like the hawks and the doves, and Akhenaten is the dove, and Horemheb would certainly be the hawk, wanting strong military presence. So Horemheb began his career under Amenhotep III, maybe probably languishes under Akhenaten for about 17 years. Remember, Akhenaten rules for 17 years, right? But then Tutankhamun comes into power. That's when we see Horemheb really go up. His stock goes up. He has the title of king's deputy under Tutankhamun. It's an important, a very important position. And he's military man, strong law and order. He marries a woman named Mut Nejimet. It's a great name, by the way. Mut is mother. Nejimet is sweet. So it's like sweet mama. That's what her name means, right? Mut Nejimet. Some people think that she was the sister of Nefertiti. Nefertiti, the wife of Akhenaten. So some people think that Horemheb is trying to show, well, I'm a little bit related to the royal family. I don't think she really was the sister. It's the same name. Nefertiti did have a sister named Mut Nejimet. But it doesn't mean that this is that Mut Nejimet. It's a common name. But he marries this woman, Mut Nejimet, right? And during his reign, when he becomes pharaoh, he's going to institute lots of new policies. Now, think about it. He's a military man. He is what we would call a law and order candidate, right? Straight arrow, firm. There's a wonderful statue of him in the Metropolitan Museum of Art. It was carved of him when he was the king's deputy, when he was working under Tutankhamun, right? And it shows Horemheb as a scribe. Now, Horemheb, it's even possible, just possible, that Horemheb was illiterate even, that he couldn't read and write, because most Egyptians couldn't. But it shows him as a scribe. It's a position everybody wanted to be kind of seen as. He's sitting cross-legged. He's got a papyrus roll on his lap, right? And along the base of the statue and on top of the scroll are hieroglyphs. And basically, it says, you know, I'm the king's deputy, and it says, I'm a straight arrow. I'm a law and order candidate. I'll give you a little quote from the statue, what it says. He says, now remember, he's an important official under Tutankhamun. It says, I am the recorder of royal laws who gives direction to the courtiers. Wise in speech, there's nothing I ignore without forgetting my charge. So he's law and order. He sets things right. Interestingly, by the way, the statue talks about the gods. Now this is under Tutankhamun. It shows how quickly things are going back to normal. Horemheb is associating himself particularly with the god Thoth, the god of writing, the god of really law and order, right, keeping the records. So things are going back to normal, and Horemheb is all for it. So Horemheb had this career under Tutankhamun, and then he becomes the next pharaoh. Now, he does some really strange things. I mean, almost unique. One of the things he does is he acts as if all the subsequent pharaohs up to Amenhotep III never existed. Now, what I mean by that is this. Horemheb ruled for about 28 years, roughly. If you look at the records that Horemheb's scribes kept towards the end of his reign, it says he ruled for 58 years. Now, what's going on? Horemheb is totally ignoring the reigns of actually four pharaohs. Let me explain. He's pretending that this heresy period anything connected with Amarna, when they tried to change the religion, when the military was allowed to go downhill, he is pretending that it never happened. He will wipe out the records of Akhenaten, the heretic, also Tutankhamun, because he was the son of the heretic. He'll even wipe out Ai's records, right? Because he was an advisor to Akhenaten. He will wipe out every trace of this heresy, and he will say, my reign comes right after Amenhotep III. So he's really adding, in a sense, 30 years to his reign, because if you figure out who ruled when, Akhenaten ruled for 17 years, Tutankhamun for about 10, so that's 27, and then we've got Ai, 3, you've got about 30 years there that he's just saying, never happened. It's a real 1984 type thing. He's rewriting history. And if you look at the king's lists, you know, the list that all the pharaohs kept, you will never see Akhenaten, Tutankhamun, or Ai on those lists. There's even one other pharaoh that Horemheb wiped out, a mysterious pharaoh. We're really not sure who he was. We know his name, Smenkhare. He ruled for only 1 year as co-regent to Akhenaten. And we don't know who he was. Was he Akhenaten's brother? Was he Tutankhamun's brother? We just don't know. And some people think, remember I talked about Tomb 55, that tomb in the Valley of the Kings, that some people thought maybe that's the mummy of Tutankhamun, but it was a mix of things. It had a shrine for Queen Tai, it had this, it had that. Some people think that may be Smenkhare. But Horemheb doesn't talk about him either. So there are really four kings who are disappeared. Right? So Horemheb is going to sort of wipe out all traces of the Amarna revolution. It's quite interesting. Now, he has some new policies that he's going to institute. The first is, he wants priests to be integrated into the army. You know, this is like the first military chaplains. This is the beginning of it. And the reason is that I think, I mean, this is my suggestion, Horemheb saw that the priest was so powerful that they could actually force Akhenaten to get out of Thebes. You know, when he's trying to close down the temples and they're saying, wait a second, Akhenaten actually had to move out of Thebes, if you'll remember, to his new capital. Horemheb saw that. Horemheb knows priests are powerful, and why not integrate them into the military, have them as an ally, right? So he's thinking, he's not going to let what happened to Akhenaten happen to him. Also, he's an army man. He knows the army very well. He has two commanders for the army. He knows the army is going to be big. It's a bureaucracy, and one person can't watch it all. So he has a commander for the north and a commander for the south. Because remember also, communications were difficult. You didn't just pick up the telephone. You know, a couple of days, a boat going north, boat going south. So he's shaking things up. Now, he also has building projects. Remember, every pharaoh wants to build, wants to show that he's a great builder. And he goes to Karnak Temple, which is the greatest temple on earth, in Thebes. And he builds a pylon for himself. Now remember, a pylon is a huge gateway. And they're huge, you know, they're like 100 feet high. And the reason you build a pylon is that it gives you a large surface that you can write on to tell about how great you are. And they almost have the same scenes, you always have the same scenes. The king is smiting his enemies, the king is making offerings to the gods. And he actually builds two pylons called the 9th and 10th. All the pylons at Karnak are numbered. He builds the 9th and 10th pylons. But he does it in an interesting way. Remember, these are people. These are real people we're talking about. These are places that you can still walk today. Think about what had happened. Akhenaten had built his temples at Karnak. Then he moves to Thebes. Then he moves away from Thebes to Amarna. Akhenaten's temples are at Karnak. And now Akhenaten dies, and everybody's going back to Thebes, and you still have these temples to this god, the Aten, that nobody really particularly likes, right? It's a reminder of a bad time. Well, our man Horemheb builds his 9th pylon out of the blocks of Akhenaten's temple. He takes down the temple, right? It must have been a kind of sore, open sore, reminding people of hard times. So he takes all of these blocks, you know, like 40,000 of them, takes them down. They're smaller blocks. They're not like pyramid blocks. They're about, oh, I'd say 2.5 feet wide. You know, two men can lift one fairly easily. And he takes all these blocks, which are carved with scenes of Akhenaten worshiping the Aten. and he uses them as the fill inside his ninth pylon. He packs the pylon inside, so he doesn't have to quarry stone. It's a cheap source of stone. You know, it's only a couple hundred yards away. And he builds his pylon out of Akhenaten's temples. Now, there's a kind of curious irony to all this. By taking down the temple and putting him inside his pylon, he preserved Akhenaten's temple. He preserved it. And in the 1920s, when there was restoration work on Horemheb's pylon and they had to take down his pylon, they discovered all these blocks. And that's when they tried to reconstruct on paper Akhenaten's temples by using a computer. As I was telling you, you photograph each block and you try to say, well, we've got the head of a pharaoh. Where is a block that has the shoulders of a pharaoh? Maybe it matches. And that's how we reconstructed what Akhenaten's temple looked like. But it's because Horemheb tore it down. Right? Now, he does other things. He usurps all of Tutankhamun's monuments. Now, think about this. He was the king's deputy under Tutankhamun. That was his really heyday almost, until he became pharaoh, of course. But it doesn't matter. Every monument that Tutankhamun had been advised to erect by probably, Horemheb takes Tutankhamun's name, carves it out, and puts his own. That's why it's so hard to find any information about Tutankhamun. Remember I said he's the mystery king? He's the most famous king in history, but we don't know anything about him? Because they were erasing all traces of him. He was associated with this heresy time, the Amarna heresy. His father was the heretic pharaoh. So Horemheb comes in and erases all traces of Tutankhamun. For example, Tutankhamun erected a stela, like all kings do, you know, the round top stone, at Karnak Temple. It's called the Restoration Stela because of what it says. Now, obviously, he's been advised by the old advisor, what to say. And what it says is, when I became king, the temples were in disarray. There were weeds growing in them. All the statues of the gods had been melted down. The military was not respected. If it rode off, nobody attended. Right? So he's really saying, Egypt had gone downhill under my father's reign, Akhenaten. So Tutankhamun has this stela erected. It's called the Restoration Stela because at the end he says, I will restore it all. I have had new statues of the gods made. Your temples are open again. Right? So I was wisely advising him, you know, this is what the people want to hear. He erects this stela, but you know, you do wonder, what does this kid think? I mean, he had grown up with his father at Amarna, and now somebody's saying, this is what we're going to say. Your father really did a bad job. You wonder what little Tutankhamun thought. But anyway, the stela is erected. Horemheb, as soon as he becomes king, you won't find Tutankhamun's name on that stela. If you look very carefully, look at the stela is in the Egyptian Museum in Cairo. You go there, you can see it. It's off in a corner. Nobody ever looks at it. Nobody knows what it is. People walk by it. But if you look very carefully where the king's name is, the cartouche, it'll say Horemheb. But if you look very carefully, you'll see that it's carved deeper than all the other hieroglyphs. Horemheb came, carved out Tutankhamun's name, and then carved his name. Right? So Horemheb is erasing all traces of Tutankhamun. Right? All traces. Also, there's one other monument that's very important for Tutankhamun, but you're not going to find Tutankhamun's name there. It's called the Luxor Colonnade. Right? It's the Luxor Colonnade. When Tutankhamun's grandfather died, he left a monument unfinished. Right? He had started a hall with long columns. That's why it's called a colonnade. He had built it at Luxor Temple, but it's undecorated. And then Amenhotep III dies. When Akhenaten moves to Amarna, it's left undecorated. It's an unfinished monument. Unfinished. When Tutankhamun moves back from Amarna to Thebes, I advise him, finish this monument. Why? You're going to be associating yourself with Grandpa, the establishment guy that everybody loved. So Tutankhamun's major monument during his 10 years of reign is restoring, completing the Luxor Colonnade. Now, how do you do it? How do you decorate it? What do you put on it? What he put on it were scenes of Opet. It's the most sacred festival in Egypt. He's a traditionalist. He's saying, look, I'm not really my dad's kid. I'm grandpa's grandson. He decorates it with Opet. Now, Opet was a wonderful festival. The major three gods of Thebes during this time were Amun, the hidden one, Mut, his wife, and Khonsu, their ram-headed son. The Trinity, always triads for all the gods. These gods had statues at Karnak Temple. Now, Karnak Temple is only about a mile and a half away from Luxor Temple. And once a year, during the festival of Opet, the statues of Amun, Mut, and Khons, these sacred statues, would be placed in a little boat shrine and taken from Karnak to Luxor, where they would spend a fortnight or so. And Luxor was called the Southern Harem. And it would be a great festival. People could see the statues of the gods. There was drinking. There was eating. And the king paid for it all. It was a wonderful town feast. Right? That's what Tutankhamun puts on Luxor colonnade. That's the decoration that he has. So that he's really saying to everybody, I'm traditional. It's back to the good old times. So he does that, which is a nice thing. And you know, Tutankhamun took part in this festival. There are scenes of Tutankhamun making offerings to the gods. But if you look very carefully at Luxor Temple, you know, I've been there a lot, you can't find Tutankhamun's name. It's all been erased. Where you have an image of Tutankhamun making offerings to the gods, cartouche is a little deeper, and there's Horemheb's name. Horemheb came right in, and just usurped the monument. So everything of Tutankhamun is going to be wiped away. That's why we hardly know about him, because he was part of this Amarna heresy. Now, what about Horemheb's own monuments? Well, Horemheb has two tombs. Now, he only has one body. Why does he have two tombs? Because first, when he was the king's deputy, when he was a commoner, he needed a tomb. So he built a tomb at Saqqara. Remember Saqqara, where the step pyramid was built? This was a place where people of the 18th dynasty, the nobility, people who were up and coming, not royalty, had tombs. It's a wonderful street, almost, of tombs. You could walk down and you could say, oh, so-and-so, the treasurer was here, the general was here, so-and-so was here. And Horemheb built a tomb for himself at Saqqara. Now, as a military commander, as the king's deputy, it's a pretty impressive tomb. Beautiful carvings. And you know what it shows? It shows Horemheb being rewarded for his good service by the pharaoh, who's probably Tutankhamun. And it shows him. He's being given gold collars, right? He's standing up, and he's got his arms up so the collar can be placed over his head, and people are coming and placing gold collars around Horemheb as his reward for good service. Now, remember, he's not going to be buried here, though, because he's going to become king. But he's going to have a tomb in the Valley of the Kings where he will be buried. But it's kind of interesting. I mean, vanity is sort of an interesting thing. The tomb at Saqqara is not going to be used as the burial place for Horemheb, because when he becomes king, he's going to want to be buried with all the big honchos in the Valley of the Kings. What he does, though, I mean, the tomb is almost complete. It's decorated. It's got scenes of military exploits, all kinds of things. When he becomes king, he sends sculptors to the Saqqara tomb to change it a little. Now, how are they going to change it, right? They're rewriting history. Horemheb the general is shown being rewarded with his collars of gold. And he tells the sculptors, wherever you see my picture, carve a little cobra on the forehead, right? Now, the cobra is called by Egyptologists the uraeus. It's a technical term. It's simply Greek for cobra. It's a Greek for cobra. The Egyptians never used that word uraeus. It's a Greek word used later. It means cobra. The cobra was the sign of royalty, of the king. If you look, for example, at the famous gold mask of Tutankhamun, he's got a cobra coming out of the forehead. As a matter of fact, you know what's interesting? It almost became the symbol of Egypt. In sign language, international sign language for, say, deaf people, the word for Egypt, you put up your finger like a cobra to your forehead. That's the word for Egypt. So it became a sort of symbol of Egypt. So Horemheb says, well, you know, I really am king. He sends the sculptors up, and they carve the little cobras all over the foreheads wherever Horemheb's image appears. Right? But, as I said, he's buried, not at Saqqara, not good enough for the king. He's buried in the Valley of the Kings. His tomb was found in 1908 by Theodore Davis, that wealthy American who was excavating in the Valley of the Kings, who gave up thinking he had found Tutankhamun's tomb. He found Horemheb's tomb. And I'll tell you something interesting about it. There are a lot of similarities between his tomb, or at least the things found in his tomb, and Tutankhamun's. See, it's a return to tradition. 1908, Tutankhamun's tomb has not been found yet, right? 1922 is when his tomb was discovered. In 1908, they found the tomb had been robbed. Horemheb's tomb had been robbed. Nice sarcophagus. Even some bones, perhaps Horemheb's bones, were found in the tomb. They weren't examined carefully. So Horemheb's mummy may, or bones at least, may exist. But they also found wooden statues, broken, badly broken. But they had been gilded, and some had been painted black. And they were, from the fragments, you could tell what they were. There was once a statue of the king standing on a panther, ready to harpoon. There were heads of panthers. These are kind of royal symbols of power, things like that. About, well, 1908 to 1922. In 1922, when Tutankhamun's tomb was found, statues just like that were found, but they were intact. So we could sort of reconstruct the statues that were in Horemheb's tomb from Tutankhamun's tomb. Horemheb was the traditionalist returning Egypt to great things, right? And what he had to do for official reasons, what he wanted to do, was erase all traces of the Amarna heresy. So he wiped out everything, including Ai. So you've got no traces, no real official records of Akhenaten, that King Smenkhere for 1 year, Tutankhamun, Ai. Horemheb says, it's Thutmose III, and then it's me. In the tomb of one of his nobles, one of Horemheb's nobles, are pictures of statues of the kings. He's got them lined up, and right next to Amenhotep III, Horemheb. And I said, there was nobody in between. He had rewritten history. And that's how the 18th dynasty ends, with the commoner, Horemheb, a military man who probably takes over by military force, which is often how it's done. It ends with a military man as king, who, when he dies, leaves no heirs. There are no children. And the question becomes, who will be the next king of Egypt? I'll see you next time.